The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thank you for listening.
This is from the Book of Serenity, San Sheng's Golden Fish. Pointer. Meeting the strong, be weak. Meeting the soft, be hard. If both are hard and meet each other, there will surely be one damaged. But tell me, how do you interchange? San Sheng asked Xue Feng, the golden fish that's passed through the net, what is it used for food? Xue Feng said, when you come out of the net, I'll tell you. San Sheng said, the teacher of 1,500 people, yet you don't even know a saying. Xue Feng said, my tasks as abbot are many. Verse. When first ascending the tiers of waves, clouds and thunder accompany, leaping up magnificently, look at the great function. With a burnt tail, he clearly crosses the gate of view. The beautiful fish won't agree to be sunk in a pickle jar. An old, mature person does not startle the crowd. Someone used to facing a great adversary has no fear from the start. Floating, floating, just as light as 5 ounces. Massive, massive, heavier than even 1,000 tons. San Sheng's exalted fame over the four seas. Who again was his peer? Xue Feng stands alone. The 8 winds blowing do not move him. The ship is coming into harbor. I always have this sense image of Ango as a ship setting sail, the beginning, and now. Toot, toot. Forty-5 years on Mount Tremper. In Buddhist geologic terms, we're barely through the birth canal. But in terms of life here on Mount Tremper, it's something. I hope there will be a 90th, 100th, think about that, 100th anniversary. We'll have to come back and shake some bones. See what's going on. I remember in watching the rock grow, that sort of very special, very simple, very early video that Don Roshi did, the 10th anniversary. And in that he said, he was talking about the future. You know, people were always trying to get him to, you know, what's going to be happening in 15 years, 20 years? He said, I don't know. He said, I'm not a prophet. He said, but he talked about the 8 gates, and he said, look, if they continue to be useful, then I hope that, you know, the teachers in the future will continue to use them. If they're not, then they should let them go. And I remember really being struck by that. Because those coming into formation, being sort of brought out in the book, that book that was really important at that time, was kind of represented something, you know, a kind of coming together of the articulation of this training that he was developing with us together, and talking about the lay and monastic paths. He used to talk about that a lot in the beginning, how he wanted them to both have full integrity, and be different. He didn't want them to be blurry. And that then he would say, well, you know, if we don't need this anymore, then we should let it go. You know, and use what's needed at that time. It reminded me of Egyoku, who was a long, long time student of Mizumi Roshi's and a teacher. She was the abbot of Cincinnati, Los Angeles for some time. She told the story that in the early years she was fretting over ZLA and their finances, and it was early years, and they didn't have much. And she went to him, and she said, Roshi, I don't know how we're going to do this. He said, it's okay, it's okay. He said, if we have to let go of the center, we let it go. He said, the Sangha will still practice. And I was struck by that too, you know, putting so much effort into developing, finding, establishing, growing a center, and him, you know, sort of leading that Sangha, saying very freely, you know, if we can't do this here, we'll let it go. It's not in the building. These mountains and rivers of the present are the actualization of the word of the ancient Buddhas. Each abiding in its own Dharma state completely fulfills its virtues. I think that those are some of the most beautiful words spoken. Mountain training. Dogen speaks of mountain training to deeply study the word of the ancient Buddhas. And to study the word is to study the body and mind of the Buddhas and ancestors, to make them our own body and mind. It's intimate. It's personal. That's why we have to get in close. To study the self within this body and mind, to study the perceived self in others. What is it? Is it? To free ourselves. Simple words, to free ourselves. To free ourselves of the net that shows up in all kinds of ways. And the problem with that net is when we find ourselves entangled in it, it's not enough to just be tangled. We throw it onto others. We kind of can't not do that. We kind of can't not have an influence. And we influence each other with ourselves. And if that self is caught and deluded and angry or greedy, then that's the network we toss out. If it's clear and kind and compassionate, then that's the net. Meeting the strong, be weak. Meeting the soft, be hard. Of course, strong and weak can mean all kinds of things. Right? There's social conditioning, gender conditioning, historical narratives about what is strong, what is weak, what is soft, what is hard. And we absorb it. And then we bring that into practice. And so to really understand and begin to experience what is real strength, what is true weakness. He's saying, when meeting the strong, be weak. We tend to often think of weakness as a fault, as something we want to avoid. He's saying, no, employ weakness. So what is that? Meeting the soft to be hard, to be pliant, to develop pliancy, suppleness, to think of that and as a trait, as a quality, as a virtue, something that we're trying to develop. That's why we have to keep meeting so many different situations, circumstances, as practitioners, a pliant mind and body, so that we can meet the needs of ourselves, of others. You know, I think about what is the allure, what is the seduction of a dictator? You know, somebody who knows all the answers. Somebody is going to take care of you, right? Make it all right. I don't have to think. I don't have to take responsibility. I just follow. But it has no fixed form. And so we have to practice letting go of the sense of a fixed form and anything in training, which can seem kind of odd, since there is attention to detail. the way we hold a bell, the way we strike a bell, the way we unfold our bowls, the way we have a meal, the way we enter the zendo. It can seem a lot about adhering to a form. That's not what it's about. It's finding pliancy, spaciousness, flexibility, freedom in a form. Right? If we're not walking in this way, we'll be walking some other way. Right? To be conscious, intentional. I think of when Huanung, having received the robe and bowl, was met by Monk Ming, who wanted to take it back. He was angry. He was righteous. Who was this nobody who had taken the fifth ancestor's robe? And Huanung just placed it on the rock and said, "This was given in faith. You can't take it by force. Take it. I leave it to you. Meeting the hard, be soft." Or was it Monk Ming who was actually soft? Who was in a state of a kind of weakness? And in Huanung's pliancy, he met something impenetrable, such that he couldn't lift the rope. I think of Dishan coming down in his ripe old age, who had been a very strong, fierce teacher, coming down for Orioki, and the Tenzo says, "Where are you going, old man? Drum hasn't sounded, it's not time yet." And Dishan just turns around and goes back. Very simple. But the student working on that koan has to enter into that mind. What's happening right there? What is that mind? If both are hard and they meet each other, there will surely be one damaged. How to interchange, how to weave, how to move amidst and intermingle. I think Zazen is the epicenter of where we discover these things. You know, I was meeting with the One Continuous Thread, some of the folks who met last night, and one of the things I was talking about was that, you know, in Zazen, like in life, we got to deal with things. You know, situations, people, circumstances, work. Things arise, we often have to respond, right? A response is needed. Zazen is like the place where you don't have to do that. You don't have to fix it. You're not there to manage. We're not here to control it. We're not here to make it right, to correct it. All of those things, right? The one place, the one time, if it's ever going to happen, before we're dead and it's too late, is Zazen, because you don't need to do that. In fact, you're specifically being asked and given permission to not do that. Just meet. Just meet. If it's too hard, it breaks. Too soft, there's no vitality. Sean yesterday talked about the gate, the eight gates. What is a gate? Those of us who entered into formal training, you know, it's not about just about putting on a robe or doing tongkaryo or these other important things. Entering into training, entering the mountain gate. We were talking the other day about how nice it would be if we had a more traditional front gate, which is usually a very significant piece of architecture. It's big. You have to walk through it, and there are deities, guardian deities, fierce deities. You have to walk through them. You have to pass through that gauntlet. They're there to protect. They're there to burn off the unnecessary. They're there to turn away those who are not actually sincere. We'd have to do some serious reconfiguring out there to make that work. So we have two little puppies. But don't mess with them. They're small, but they're mighty. Sancheng was a student or a successor of Linji, the Linji lineage, and Deshan was a student of Zhuifeng. So these were very different lineages, 9th century. And one day a student asked Zhuifeng, what is it if my fundamentally correct eye sometimes goes astray because of my teacher? Zhuifeng says, you haven't yet met Bodhidharma. And the student says, well, where is my eye? Zhuifeng says, you're not going to get it from your teacher. Thank goodness. Thank goodness. But don't over-rely on that. Don't over-rely on others, he's saying. Don't over-rely on your teacher. In other words, in entering into training, implicit in this is you are trusted to find out. You are being trusted to find out. Not only because there is no other way, but actually being trusted, which means you have the capacity. You don't entrust somebody with something that they're not capable of doing. That's not kind. Another student, another time, asked Zhuifeng, what is it when one is solitary and independent? And Zhuifeng said, still sick. Not yet healed. Not yet fully alive. Don't over-rely on oneself. So here Sancheng asks Zhuifeng, with this golden fish, it's often used as an image of an enlightened being that leaps, that swims upstream like salmon and leaps over waterfalls to get to the place of its searching. And so this golden fish that has passed through the net, what does it use for food? There are several koans that talk about what is it before enlightenment? Chimen, I think, said lotus flower. What about after enlightenment? Lotus leaves. We want to know, right? What is it before? But we're most interested in what is it after? How is it after I pass through this net? Tell me that story. The net of greed and anger, pride, jealousy. You name it. You have your own list. But now, what do you use for food? What is passing through? What is the path? What is a gate of entry? A gate is something that can block our passage. If it's locked, if it won't open, if we don't know the key, the code, the combination, it won't let us pass. And so it's a fitting image, right? Because it often seems that we cannot pass. We cannot pass through. There's something we're not able to pass through. We practice, the mind is distracted. It starts to calm, it calms, and then there's a moment, many moments, where there's nothing arising. But there still seems to be something there, something in between, a veil, a screen, something that seems to be obstructed, but you can't see anything. How do you pass through that? How do you let go there? And so Buddhism speaks about a path, passing through a thicket of brambles. If you've ever walked through the woods, the nice thing about being on a trail is the trail is cut for you, right? It is cut through the brambles, so you don't have to deal with them. You just walk. But a true path isn't like that. It's sort of like somebody cuts a trail as they're walking the path, but as soon as they pass through, it all grows back in. Right? So when you encounter it, you have to do the same thing. And if you've ever walked through a tangle of rhododendron, for instance, it's called the hiker's nightmare, right? It's like it's almost impossible. There's a river of samsara, right, that we have to cross over paramita, prajna paramita, crossing over to the other shore. So these images, these metaphors, this sense of traveling, of moving from somewhere to somewhere else, which is accurate and inaccurate at the same time. And so normally, for most, for many, we're motivated, right, by what the Buddha spoke of in the first noble truth, dukkha, right? It's coming in loud and clear. Almost. Enough to get our attention. And so that's a great motivator. It's a strong motivator because it hurts. It's painful. It's exhausting. It's confusing. It's all of that stuff. And so we can either ignore it, deny it, numb ourselves, or, you know, distract ourselves, and Lord knows there's ample opportunities for that. But for some, it just keeps getting through all that. That doesn't work anymore. And so that can be a very good motivator. And what happens often, in a sense, naturally, you might even say necessarily, is that as practice continues, a lot of those brambles, those thickets, those obstacles begin to resolve, drop away. They don't show up. They don't appear in the same way. They're not so strong. You don't get so hooked. Pliancy, freedom. And what often happens, I've seen, is that students sometimes will get lost there because that sort of very long-standing, familiar motivation is not the same, right? The fire may still be there, like burning your ass a little bit, but it's not this raging fire. And so oftentimes I see students will really kind of wander. They're not quite sure what is motivating their practice now. And in a way, it's a place where some people can see, you know, what it really are they looking for? What are they motivating? Sometimes that's enough. That's sufficient. Their life is better demonstrably. That's a good thing. They're living better lives. They're kinder people. They're happier. They're more contented. Things are working. And maybe that's really sufficient. But for others, it's not. There's still something that has not been addressed, that is not yet clear. It's sort of like, you know, working very diligently to get to that door. You know, not everybody read Narnia. I didn't. But I kind of figured it out.
Yeah, I wasn't reliant upon you having read Narnia.
Oh, I really felt like I took that personally. I really felt like I felt like I was the only one who hadn't read it.
I'm so sorry.
But it's like working to get to this door, you know, that it seemed far away, impossible, maybe never. And then there it is, and you open this door. And it's just, you stand there, it's like, oh, this is good. And then you just sit down and have a barbecue, you know. It's like, no, step forward. The way is open now, more clear. So, having passed through the net, what does the fish now use for food? And Zui Feng says, when you come out, then I'll tell you. When you come out, then I'll tell you. The footnote says, only say 30% for the time being. Why? Why only 30%? The Buddha made a point over and over again about how he wasn't tight-fisted, which meant he had taught what there was for him to teach. He didn't hold anything back. He didn't conceal, he didn't harbor, he gave it all away. So why only 30%? Zui Feng says, I'll tell you later. Saying too little, the precept on not being withholding really refers to the Dharma, not being withholding, not being stingy with the Dharma. It doesn't mean go out and convert people. It doesn't mean tell everybody everything you think you know. Don't be a big mouth Buddha person. It means when somebody's asking, when somebody wants to know, and you have something that you can offer. You have experience. You're meditating. So why only 30%? So saying too little can not meet the needs of the person. Saying too much can ruin their meal. Very important principle. Say too much, better if she used to say it, it robs something essential from the student. It is not trusting them. You know, how can we learn to use our minds deeply, well, if we haven't learned how to think? Now, that might seem strange, because in a sense we are taught, in a way, how to think, but maybe not, actually. We're taught a lot about what to think. What should we think about? But are we taught how to think? It's just sort of take it for granted. You have a mind, you have thoughts, you know how to think. We know how to have thoughts, but do we know how to think, how to use this power? So we have to learn how to think. Well, how do we do that? Well, first we have to shut up. I say that respectfully. We have to give it up a bit. Learn how not to think for a moment. And realize, oh, we have that capacity. You have that capacity. It's a natural capacity. And then, from that place, we begin to discover how to think. How can we meet adversity if we haven't experienced adversity? If we haven't met difficulties and discovered their inner workings? And not just, you know, anywhere, everywhere, randomly, you know, at a loss, but met adversities within the context of practice, the way, the path, training. In a way, to meet adversities that are very simple, ordinary, nobody's trying to make your life difficult here. Actually, the whole point is to make it easier. But it's rigorous, right? And so we meet these small little bitty adversities. They don't always feel that way. Right? Admittedly. But in the landscape of the world, they're workable. And within that, within this, can we trust them? You're not the only one getting up before 4 o'clock. You're not the only one sitting silent. You're not the only one facing the mind. Right? And so can we trust those adversities and within this context, practice them? I remember Open Sozan many years ago, and a person who'd been practicing for quite a number of years said that every session they always experienced pain. It was always, you know, very obstructing, very difficult. And this session they decided they would really try and practice, you know, what the teachings say. You know, really use it to really concentrate their mind, go into the pain. And then they spoke about how transformative that was, which was wonderful. And meanwhile, I'm thinking, just now? Just now you're doing that. Bravo. And maybe earlier? We each have to come at the time we're ready. How can we meet pain and suffering in others if we haven't met our own? How can we really cultivate compassion, alleviating suffering, if we haven't met and alleviated our own? Xue Feng says, when you come out of the net, I'll tell you. Is he holding back? Is he withholding from Sancheng? Is he going right into Sancheng's belly and meeting him there? The commentary says, Sancheng, in posing this question, undeniably set out a bowl of glue in a forest of thorns. place to get stuck. Xuefeng at first is 30 steps away, watching you, looking in yourself and drawing out yourself. It's a very interesting image he creates. Xuefeng is 30 steps away, watching you as you ask this question, looking in yourself, trying to draw out yourself. And so he says, wait till you come out of the net, and then I'll tell you. Strange. It's just like a national champion of playing chess, of chess playing, first looking several moves ahead before they make their move. You know, it's presented as very strategic, you know, like very calculated. I don't think it's like that. It's much more natural, spontaneous, immediate. And Sancheng says, the teacher of 1,500 people and you don't even know a saying, you can't respond, you can't offer a teaching. The commentary says, Sancheng, seeing that at this stage, victory and defeat are not distinguished, goes by a different road. Sees that this is not about victory and defeat. This is not about who knows and who does not know. And that's one of the beautiful things about the koan. It presents what sounds like a very ordinary conversation. Xuefeng knows, Sancheng doesn't. Sancheng's in the net, he doesn't really understand. When he comes out, Xuefeng will tell him. Right? That's the obvious point, except it's not. They're having the same words, but they're having a different conversation. They're meeting each other. Sancheng, seeing this, goes a different way. And so he says, you're the teacher of 1,500 people. You don't even know what to say. Using the tooth and nail of the cave of Dharma, the commentary says, Sancheng captured him alive. And so Xuefeng, honest and sincere, just said, my tasks as abbot are many. Is he just complaining? Is he weary of this conversation, just wanted to be over? Are they meeting? What is passing through the net? It's a path, right? So there has to be a sense of movement, progression, traveling, going through different landscapes. Right? It's not static. It's not stuck. It's moving. In fact, the Doshinji Code says there needs to be progress, which is very interesting. You might not have seen that little phrase in the Doshinji Code. Right? What does that mean? What would a person, a practitioner here in Sesshin, in residency, practicing regularly, have to do to not move anywhere along the path? Think about it. What would they have to do? They would have to be not practicing in a very deliberate and demonstrative way. Of course, there are many times where we feel like we're not moving. We're stuck. We're not developing. Right? We're not getting what we want. We're not experiencing what we should be. All of that. But to actually not make progress doesn't mean not changing, because not changing is not a possibility. And so that's why that, has that part of the Doshinji Code ever been invoked? This is not working for you because you have made no progress whatsoever? I don't think so.
Close.
Okay, we will not name names here. Just plant the seed of doubt. Who could that be? What is Zazen? What is training? What is selflessness? What is true compassion? Sit, train, practice for 3 years, 5 years, 30 years. then I'll tell you. Ryokan said, when you know my poems are not poetry, then we can have a discussion about poetry. Does that mean, it seems to imply, does that mean that we just sort of live in confusion for 3 years, 5 years, 20 years, 30 years, and then the door is open? Of course not. Is that what you've seen? I've told this story about once when I went into Dzogchen during a session in a moment of some frustration. And I was complaining about how, you know, I don't think I'm getting anywhere, nothing is changing, blah, 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 complain, 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 you know, nothing is working. And Dada Roshi looked at me and just went, rang the bell. That must be hard. Must be hard being you. Which, of course, just got me really pissed off. Right, I want to go right back in and argue for all the ways and things, all the way things have changed. What is this path? I was thinking about when Jimon and I drive down to North Carolina to see my family. We leave the Catskills. We follow the mountains. Pennsylvania, Maryland, Virginia, Tennessee, North Carolina. Go through all these landscapes, villages, towns, cities, changing landscapes, weather patterns. We're moving, we're traveling. And at each point along the way, every point along the way is complete. It's a place. People live there. It's got history, right? It is complete with everything that life needs at every point along the way. It abides within its own state. And we are moving closer. To what? Well, if we're going to the property where my family lives in North Carolina, then the analogy fails, right? Because there is no property of enlightenment. But if my destination is returning home, my first home, my birth home, my origin, where is that exactly? How will I know when I get there? Is it the hospital where I was born? Is it the house I grew up in? Is it where my heart beats the loudest? There are sights and smells, sounds. When we roll across the border into North Carolina, I have a little ritual. I put in the Allman Brothers and I turn it up loud. Oh yeah. A student asked Changsha, where are you coming from? Changsha said, from wandering in the mountains. The student says, where did you go? Sanxin said, well, first I went pursuing fragrant grasses. And then I came back along the falling flowers. And the student said, how very much like the sense of springtime. Where did he get to? Did he arrive there? How do we hold this? It's not a duality. That's the short answer. We can say it's not a place. It's not a thing. We get that. We still want that. We want to know when we've arrived. It's not a duality. It is not something apart from something else. Dada Roshi used to say, all the way to heaven is heaven itself. And then he would say, I'm going to take you there even if I have to carry you on my back. He was kidding about that part. All the way is the way. And maybe that's why it takes 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years to really know that. It's not an idea. We can have faith in it. It can encourage us. It can point us in the right direction. It can help us reorient when we get fixated on things. It can be useful in all kinds of ways, knowing that, but really knowing that, I think must take time. It's just too baked in that it has to be otherwise. When first ascending the waves, the tears of waves, clouds and thunder accompany. The footnote says, regrets that heaven hasn't come yet. Thank goodness. Thank goodness. Why? So that we can learn how to walk, to swim, to leap, to fly. Every living thing faces great odds in this life. You know, if you read about any life form, whether it's a tree or a flower or an insect or a mammal or a fish, in terms of propagation, in terms of a new generation and those new life forms actually succeeding into life, the odds are not in their favor. Very few make it. We've improved that a bit. But we still face dangers and risks, like the danger of caring, the risk of loving, the danger of committing yourself to something and saying, yes, I am going to do this. I am doing this. And of course, the risk of what? Failure. Thought. Story. Leaping up magnificently, look at the great function, so that we can discover that. Our great function. The beautiful fish won't agree to be sunk in a pickle jar. In a sense, that's what we're expressing when we say, I do not choose to live in samsara passively anymore. Right? I am committed to another way. I am not going to live in a pickle jar. An old, mature person does not startle the crowd. This is in the training, a mature person, a person who's grown in time, has experienced a lifetime of practice. They've lost their shine. They're not startled. They've seen a few things. They've been through a few things. They've learned how to face adversity. They've learned to understand what is actual adversity. Where is it? That's why Dada Roshi used to say, this is not for sprinters. It's for long distance runners. Remember, there was a guy who called many years ago when I was at the office downstairs. I was a registrar. I think he was from Oklahoma. And he said, I've sold my farm. I'm packing everything up in a truck and I'm coming out. I said, for what? To be there and do it until it's done. I said, hang on. Do not do that. Do not do that. Stop. Wait, we need to have a conversation. He said, I'm coming. And honest to God, he showed up on the doorstep days later. And do you know how long he stayed here? Not even a day. Not even overnight. Right? Because the moment he came in, I said, okay, so this is what it means. He was like, what? Floating, floating, as light as 5 ounces. Easy, easy. Massive, massive, heavier than 1,000 tons. Difficult. When light, meet it honestly. When heavy, meet it honestly. Meet it simply, nakedly. Before the net, inside the net, beyond the net. What is the use of the net? What do you use for food? What do you use for food? This afternoon, tomorrow, we'll be doing Shuso Hosen, and Eno will say something about that a little bit later, but you know, it's important to understand because it's high ceremony, right? It's lots of drama. It's not that. It is not a performance. Please know that. That if the Shuso has done his job, their job, when they say those words, they're real. They're real. Even though the words are offered and said by each chief disciple, they should be real. And this is how, one of the ways in which this living Dharma is passed down, right? It doesn't just happen within the student. It doesn't just happen between the student and teacher. It happens everywhere. And so tomorrow is a big everywhere that everybody is a part of and everybody makes happen. So please just appreciate that it's, you know, during open sozans, you know, oftentimes well-wishing people, I get it, people who love the chief disciples says, have fun, and I just cringe, right? I mean, I think I understand what they're saying, but it's like, it's not make it a misery, but it is about life and death. It is about a house on fire. Is there joy in that? Absolutely. And there will be joy. But let it come from that natural, authentic place of doing something that is true and doing it in a way that is true. So let's really, you know, think of all of this 3 months of training, and in a sense, your whole life of practice up to this point, and that we just stay here. That's what this week is about. You just stay here. It's not over. Tomorrow's an eon away. Let this moment be that eon.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.